Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. I'm excited to introduce our guest today. He's Jesse Sells, and he's the co-founder and chief operating officer of Impact Growth Capital, where he manages daily operations of a diverse portfolio of properties and companies. With a strong passion for creating meaningful change, Jesse connects strategic vision with concrete results. His focus ensures that each project not only achieves its goals, but also positively impacts communities and the wider market. Before starting his entrepreneurial journey, Jesse had a remarkable career as a combat aviation advisor and intelligence analyst in Air Force Special Operations. He spent years briefing 3- and 4-star generals and deploying alongside foreign military partners. Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, Ed, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So I have to ask, of course, your journey took you from military intelligence to family entrepreneurship. What inspired the shift, and how would you say your military experiences shape your approach to running and working in within a family business with your, I understand it's your brother and your father?
Yeah, absolutely. First off, I want to point out to anybody that's listening that's been in the military, especially in intelligence, that is a job title. That is not a requirement. If you meet some of these guys, you're going to say, how in the heck? So that was a very interesting career, though, and I've got to all respect to other people that have actually been out there and do it. Most of my time in military intelligence, I was way in the middle of the base, and I didn't even carry a gun, because by the time they got to me, we were in bad shape. Let's keep the respect where the respect belongs. So, yeah, so the transition, I guess, from lower middle class, we always were a remodeling company. So this is a very long answer. I'll try to keep it quick, Ed. Okay. Remodeling family. I think I had 3 brothers with different remodeling companies. My dad was in construction for 30 something years. So we've always been in real estate in that way, but we didn't start it as a family business until I got out of the military around 8 years ago. So that's when my other brother, also in the military, he was getting out at the same time. So we talked together, convinced my dad, and we all went in all at the same time, full board into real estate investing, focused on, at that point, mobile home parks. But really, we focused on affordable housing.
Okay, cool. Okay. One of the things in reading up on your background, you talk a lot about Impact Growth Capital, and it aims to both create financial returns and meaningful social impact. Can you talk about that for a bit and how you balance the two?
It's possible, right? There's a way to make money. There's a way to have profit with a purpose. In the beginning, I'll be honest and I'll be the bad guy here. I just wanted financial freedom. I didn't want to grow up or have my kids, which I don't have, but one day maybe grow up the way I did where we didn't have running water for a while, taking baths in horse troughs and having a fire underneath it. So as long as you didn't sit right on top of the fire, you get burned, but if you moved around, you'd be okay. So the water's warm. So I just wanted money, man. I know it's terrible to say. But then as we started investing in these properties, and what happened is we had a few people that something bad happened in their life. And they're just like the 60-something% of Americans that are paycheck to paycheck. So something bad happened. And I was like, oh, crap. Let me figure this out, Mary. Let me go find somebody. So what I did was I called charity to charity to charity. And I got Mary the support for her and her kids. That's food on the table. That's legal help. That's mental help for her children that now they could pay their rent and they could stay for longer. And that's when the started clicking in my brain. Oh, wow, we can have a bigger impact. So now that's all we really focus on. And in fact, we won't invest unless we know that we can have a real impact on people's lives.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Great. The another thing that you mentioned here in your backgrounder was a little bit about emotions and how emotions can sometimes cloud judgment in a family business. And we know, certainly coming because I'm a second gen with siblings that were in the business at a time, emotions can run high, and we're crazy passionate Italians over here as D'Elias. So Can you talk a little bit more about that, about how our emotions maybe posed a challenge and how you and the others were able to overcome and get through that?
Yeah, I think that's the best and the worst part about working in a family is that exactly, right? Because my brother's always gonna be my brother. I know he's got my back. I'll always have his back. But we're also not afraid to tell each other if we're doing something wrong. And you take it personally because it's family, because it's history. So now we've had a lot of arguments and disagreements. But we have a policy that we can go into a room, have a massive a disagreement, argument. But when we leave that room, we are unified for a company. We're not going to tear apart the company. So I think it happens more often than not, when especially when there's growing pains, we see divisions change a little bit. But I think it's good. I think you have to have a partner or partners that you trust, or else how do you grow? How do you move forward?
So different families seem to do this differently. I know at one point when my father and I overlapped, or at least I more so than he was a little more fluid. I said, no, when we're family time, we're family time for business. And
Absolutely.
I created a little bit more of divisions. Whereas other families, it's far more organic, where it's perfectly acceptable to start rolling into a business conversation at a family gathering and vice versa, to be at work and start talking about, hey, it's mom's birthday coming up. What are we going to get her? How does it work in your world? Like, what works for you and your team?
Yeah, it's very similar. We use Teams. So if it's a Teams message, it's usually work related. Text message, it's family related or something else. Yeah,
So
so
that's
pretty
how
similar.
you draw the lines.
Yeah,
That's
there's overlap, of course, but yeah, when we try. And I think that's just from years and years of you put in these 12 plus hour days, and after a while, you realize that just for your own family's sake, you've got to draw the line somewhere.
Absolutely. The going back to your time with military and spending years advising these high-ranking officials, these high-ranking generals, certainly there's must have been something that carried forward from that to impact growth. So what are some of the lessons learned, the strategies, the methodologies, philosophies that you've carried forward into Impact Growth Capital that have been particularly useful or effective?
Yeah, I think we're all people. That's the lesson learned. So I remember I happened to be the youngest, lowest ranking airman ever to brief at this one at the headquarters, this three star, two star, one four star. And I was briefing them and I was shaking in my boots. I don't know how I didn't pee my pants. But then after spending time with them, because I was there for a month and a half, I realized that they're just people. And now it's changed the way I go when I meet investors or big people. For example, this past week, I had the opportunity to just sit and talk to the CEO of Priceline, Jeff, and we just talked for 45 minutes about nothing. I asked a couple of business questions, but other than that, we just had a conversation. And I think that's what he wanted, and that's what I wanted, to just connect on a different level. Because we're all just people at the end of the day. And if you see that and you understand that, it makes it a lot easier to go and meet the people and build those connections for long term.
Nice. And I found that to be true too. I remember very early in my career, I was paired up with a mentor and, it was like a $120 million company. And I raised the problem thinking, oh, certainly he knows how to solve this one. And he kind of looked at me, he goes, yeah, we all have that problem, don't we? And I'm like, wow. And I guess what my takeaway was, he has the same problems I have, just on a different level, but they're the same problems at the root that he's
Yeah,
dealing with. So I was like, okay,
and I
cool.
love that they're like, yeah, you just got to go figure it out. I'm like, thanks. Thanks for the I'm looking for a golden nugget. Yeah.
So in the more the near term journey with Impact Growth Capital, what's a surprising lesson that maybe you've learned about yourself or learned about the dynamics of working alongside family that you'd care to share?
I think I learned who I was in a business sake. And then I learned who my brother was on a business side, right? He's a visionary. I'm the very, okay, how do we do this? Step by step. That's how I see the world. It's ones and zeros more, and why? And then he's a why not guy. So it ends up that it's a good give and take, which is probably why we argue so much about different things, because everything's possible. I'm like, no, it's not. But it's a good where he's pulling me up and then I'm sometimes pulling him down. And I've learned that about myself is like, I need to be pushed a little bit. I need that somebody to prod me and say, why not? Because no one does that. Who cares what everybody else does?
And
Who
one could
cares?
say maybe he needs you to pull him a little, right? To say,
Yes,
right?
100%.
Which when healthy sounds like the two of you make a very complementary balance. He's going to maybe go out on a limb a little further. You're going to pull him back when prudence tells you to, but maybe because he's going out, you're going to go out a little further than your natural instincts would, and somewhere in the middle, the magic will happen, right?
Absolutely. And I think you have to. I think you have to always question why you're doing things and why people aren't doing other things. And he's really good at that, which has completely opened my mind because I'll say that all the time. That's not what they do. Who cares? I mean, you're right.
Now, where does your father fit into all this? What is his, how does he complement that dynamic?
Absolutely. So he takes the he has the experience of the development side. So working in the construction side, he runs all of our crews. So he brings the absolute as we figure out big picture, what we're planning on do, especially in these real estate deals we're doing. Right now we're doing partnerships with local public housing authorities because they don't have the money to run it. They're running slums. So we come in and clean them up essentially. So he's on board with how the ones and zeros of the development, running the teams, the construction management side of the house. And then he's the referee sometimes when we're trying to figure out kind of big picture where the company's going. Yeah.
And you failed to ask you, your brother, what is the age difference between you and your brother?
10 years.
10 years. Okay. So are you
Yeah.
the younger or the older?
That's right, Ed. I'm the oops or the blessing in the family. Yeah.
That's very funny you say
All
that because I too am an oops. I have a
right. Nothing wrong with that.
10 year gap between my siblings.
Good company.
So, which also makes for an interesting dynamic working with an older sibling, doesn't it? Because traditionally they're supposed to be the higher rank in some respects.
Can I turn the tables here? Can I ask you, how long did it take for you guys to work past that older brother, younger brother in the family business? Or is it just you and your dad?
So it was me and my dad and my sister, and she's
Your
even
sister,
older.
okay.
She's, so I've got a about a 15 year gap between my sister and myself. So the growing up dynamic, it was kind of like having a second younger mom, basically. So in business, I had to be very careful with that relationship because I sure as heck didn't want to mess up that relationship. So it was always with a lot of respect, in which if there was a disagreement, it was handled with a lot of respect from my end. And I think she acknowledged that and appreciated that. And in the end, I'm still her younger, her baby brother, who's trying to do something, but nonetheless is still her baby brother. So I think that's how we handled it. So she overlapped for a few years, and then really she had other interests that she wanted to pursue, which she did, and had a very successful career at NY University, where she
Nice.
recently retired, which was great for her. That was really, she loved academia and she immersed herself there. And sometimes you get involved with the family business and you look up and you say, why am I here? How did this happen? But she did great things here and she did great things after. But that was the way we pulled it off, with a lot of respect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that a lot of people can identify with, and something we had to work through is being the younger brother. There's still some of that younger brother. Oh, you're the younger brother, or there's some deference there. And you got to learn how to, for me, I had to learn how to speak up more and say, no, this doesn't make sense, or this does make sense, or make sure that doesn't carry over too much in the business world.
Which leads to another point, another topic, which is sometimes challenging in the family business dynamic, and that's candor and transparency. Like a lot of times there's the big elephant in the room, but we don't want to point it out of fear of maybe hurting somebody's feeling or ruffling feathers. But a lot of times being transparent and being authentic and being true is essential in business. Maybe thinking about a situation in your world where that was the case, where you had to be open and honest about maybe a hard conversation that maybe made the difference.
Yeah, and I think constantly learning, constantly growing. In the beginning, I've let those build. And I think recently, last year or two, I think I've gotten a lot better about having those a lot more micro conversations about things that those issues and things, instead of letting it build into a bigger one that turns into a bigger argument. Because especially with the visionary, where we're going down this road, but there's also this road and this road. Yeah, cool, but we just got to choose one at some point. Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely an issue. And I think that goes back to, as long as you can fall back on, hey, this is family. Hey, we're going to be, when everybody else leaves, when everybody else is going to go hop to another job, we're still going to be here. There's that trust that's implicit about no matter what, we're both here for the right reason. We both want to succeed, or our family does. All three of us want to succeed. But it's about how we do it. That's the only disagreement. So I think when you, it's, from experience with other people in the business, sometimes they get feelings hurt and they leave, or I've seen in other places. I usually don't have that issue with our employees, but I think as long as everything's based on that and you can focus on the issue, not the personal feelings or the everything else attached to it, it can be healthy.
Let's talk about that for a bit more. It's your brother, your dad, yourself. Is that effectively the leadership team, or are there other people that play a leadership role in the organization?
Yeah, so there are other people that play a leadership role now.
Okay. So that brings another dynamic, doesn't it? So you've got family members and you've got non-family that are sitting at the table. Expound on that a bit. How do you make that work? How do those people feel included or not like they missed a piece of the conversation because it happened to happen over maybe a Sunday dinner and Monday morning there's something new on the table that they're like, where did this come from? Like, how do you make sure that they feel part of the inclusive as while being not being a family member?
Yeah, absolutely. That happens all the time. And I think we try to be really intentional about every Monday afternoon, actually. We all get on a call, all the leadership, talk about what the plan is this week, what the new updates from the week prior, make sure we're all on the same page. Are there any decisions we need to make? Okay, we're all on board, vote if we need to, and move forward that way. Because unfortunately, that happens, especially when right now we're, like I said, we're working with a lot of different public housing authorities. So only a few of us go travel and actually meet the people. We only said we had to, we're fortunate enough to go and meet the HUD secretary last week, but only two
Wow.
people went. So everybody else gets left out of those conversations.
Yeah.
And now I'm here, and my brother's in Las Vegas working a deal with the housing authority there. Once again, I'm out of the loop now. So as long as we're very intentional about making sure we're all on the same page, but it does happen, unfortunately. Just as conversations go, people get missed,
Yeah.
get out of
Yeah.
the loop.
And as long as you have that circle back to make sure you cover all bases and everybody knows what they need to know. You're okay, but yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen.
Absolutely.
Given that the dynamic with you and your brother, he being older, he being more the visionary, you being more of an integrator, the one that's going to figure out, okay, how do we actually make this happen and enable this? When you do have disagreements on things, what's your mode of resolution? How do you guys work through stuff?
Mostly screaming. No, honestly, what works best for us, and I don't know why, but it's just whiteboarding it out. And usually, works best when we're together when we can actually write down things and what our ideas are and how this is going to work, and then break it down. And a lot of times, we may disagree, but it's just because of the way we're both seeing it. I'll say something, and he's imagining a little bit different what I'm seeing, and he'll say something, and I'm imagining something different. But when we kind of explain it and write it all down and draw a picture or a million different like squiggly lines everywhere, all of a sudden it's an aha moment. Okay, this makes more sense, and we get on the same page and move forward.
Cool. So when my dad and I overlapped, we had an interesting method because we're two crazy passionate Italians. It's who was more crazy and passionate about the idea? That's who won. So if my dad really dug his heels in on something, I'm like, all right,
I'll see.
but the deal was, if you want it, you own it. So whatever comes of it, it's on you. And if
We've had
I
some of
wanted
those,
it, it's on me. And I'm going to own it. If we're wrong, I'm going to own it. And I'm not going to say, oh, I didn't know. No, it's mine. That's usually how we. So I'm just like, boy, he's really digging his heels on this one. All right, I'm going to give him that one. But that was, I don't know if it's the best method or book practice, but that's how we did it. And it worked for us.
Yeah, and you're not always going to agree. So that's okay. As long as it doesn't tear apart the company, then you're good to go.
Thinking about going back to impact growth for a minute. So can you talk about something that's going on right now or something recent that you're really proud of for its that community impact that and maybe one that really resonates with you personally, Jesse? Like a big win.
Yeah, we're so again, brothers is visionary, had this idea to take this nationwide, and I said, you're crazy. So him being crazy, he did get to go sit down with the National HUD Secretary, Scott Turner, Frank Cassidy, the Deputy Secretary, last Wednesday, and they agreed we're going to get a pilot program to essentially, like I said, right? The federal government has 900,000 units. 30% of them, this is a real number, fail their own livability assessment. They're
Wow.
not even livable units,
Oh my
but
gosh.
people are in there. Massive issue. We
Wow.
estimate around $200 billion needed. The government's not going to pay for that. So now we're starting a pilot program where not only do we go in and we rehab it, maybe we tear it down, redevelop it, but we also give people a blueprint, a guide to get off of the system.
right? Step by step. And this is backed by the federal. They want us to do this pilot program. And that's why Sam right now is in Las Vegas. He works through the details of this program. So great for us for our impact, great for us for partnering with the local housing authority and the government. And then on the investor side for us, it's now we get access to the grants, we get access to the subsidies. And then now our tenant is the US government. So not a bad tenant to have. So I'm
Yeah.
pretty excited about where this can go.
That's amazing. That's awesome. There's a lot of times when government and private enterprise don't always get it right, let's say, but sometimes
Oh,
they
yeah.
do. And when they do, oftentimes it's usually driven by private enterprise and it's a home run. And it sounds
Oh,
like
yeah, I think so.
you're on the cusp of a home run. That's awesome. That's really
Yeah, I
exciting.
think so.
That's really exciting.
So the opportunity here is amazing.
So that's getting around to that idea of balancing. Obviously, you're a business and you've got to make money and you've got to be a for-profit enterprise, but you're also trying to bring that social good at every step you take. That's got to be hard. How do you navigate that balance? Like, how do you strike that right balance? Because that's got to be tricky.
Yeah, so I think what we do is we separate it a little bit. So we have our fund per se for the real estate side. Then we have a nonprofit. So the nonprofit supports our residents, but it's separate. And
Okay.
support is just helping people again with food. It helps people with transportation, with daycare services, with emergency rental assistance if it comes up to that. Because people, I think, are inherently good personally. And they want to go work and they want to get out of the system. And they want to better their lives, but they're tied down because the car's broken down or they have kids and daycare's too expensive or just something happens and life sucks. So
Yeah.
when that happens, if we have our nonprofit tied in, which can support them, then that really just supports our own fund, our own real estate project itself as well. It's self-supporting of itself. That makes
Okay.
sense.
It does. That's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting model. And rather, I would say, or I'll ask the question, are there other entities out there doing what you guys are doing, or are you somewhat unique in this space?
We're somewhat unique in the space of how we do this. There are a million nonprofits out there that support people. I'm a veteran, so I work pretty closely with a lot of veteran organizations. But the problem is they're catty. I don't know how best to explain this, and they're siloed. Salvation Army is awesome, but it does these things, right? Nothing else. And they're one of the biggest, right? So all these different organizations do one thing, they're not great at marketing. So what we've done previously and what we're doing now with a nonprofit is pull all these silos together. And then we have a case manager that kind of dips in, okay, this nonprofit can help us here, but it can't help, we'll dip into our own. So that's kind of the difference. So I think a lot of people use nonprofits for support, but I don't know of anybody, honestly, that has their own nonprofit that's doing the admin of pulling all these nonprofits together and providing support for the residents.
Yeah, because that's from the exposure that we've had to, and we will from time to time support a nonprofit. One of the biggest challenges that so many of them face is I'll just say either clarity or awareness that they exist and here's how they help. Because you see a lot of people, and that's on the needing side, saying I need support, I need resources, and they're either stumbling upon them by happenstance, right? Or they're going and searching, saying, where do I get this? And oftentimes finding this organization will do 20% of what you need. This one will do 10%. This one won't help you at all. This one will get you halfway there, but nothing really that. So, that leads to probably you all having to do some level of, I'll call it missionary work to get the word out there. So how do you do that? How do you let
Absolutely.
people know, hey, we've got this resource. We've got this bundled solution here. We've got this other vehicle here to help with people in need of housing and other things. How do you get the word out, Jesse, to let people know that you guys are out there and that you've got a solve that might work for them?
Yeah, so right now it's word of mouth primarily for talking to government entities to take over and help people get out. For finding the nonprofits, it's legwork, Ed. You're right. It's calling, it's picking up, it's reaching out to everybody you can and creating some of it. Some of it's calling a daycare and saying, hey, I have 30 people. Can you give us a group rate? Oh, yeah. Because now we can negotiate on a higher level because we have 400 people in this apartment complex that need some kind of service. So it's a lot of legwork. We have a property in DFW, really Fort Worth, and we have 50 pages of all the different nonprofits and organizations that support our residents. It's a ton, but when I first started, I knew of three. So it's all about picking up the phone and making calls. And it took us probably about 6 months to figure out all 50. And then every year changes and funding changes. So it's a lot of work. That's why we have a nonprofit that's funded to do that stuff and case managers to keep up with everything.
And when the not on the nonprofit side, when they discover you're out there, do you find that they're fairly receptive to your message? Are they skeptical? Are they receptive? Are they excited? How do they typically respond when they hear about Impact Growth and your nonprofit that supports that?
Yeah, absolutely. They love it. Yeah. So for the public housing authority side, usually when they turn over a property like this, it goes through what's called an RFP process, which can take, for the size we're doing in Las Vegas, it can take over a year. Just put out the proposal, take it, evaluate it, and then finally turn it over. Because of our nonprofit and what we're doing to get people out of the system, the pilot program, they just pointed at us. And they said, we want you guys. So they sole sourced it to us. We didn't have to go through any of the process. Still dealing with red tape. Don't get me wrong. It's still kind of a process, but it shortens it by a fraction.
That's
The
awesome.
other nonprofits, they want to spend money on veterans. They want to spend money on cancer survivors. But so it helps them out too for us to provide them resources to do it. And then we also have guys that will volunteer at like the YMCA for free membership. So that helps up the YMCA. So there's a lot of different things you can do to support people.
There's a lot of moving parts to this organization for sure.
There is. Yeah, it's
That's
fun.
really cool. Looking at the what's going on either in the business or in the greater space that you're in, what are some things that are exciting you right now, Jesse, that you're, wow, this is really looking exciting, or on the horizon that you're looking forward to or looking ahead to?
Yeah, it's really this pilot program. If this thing takes off, we could do this everywhere. And that's what we're hoping. We're going to create a, we have a software we're developing as well that's going to help people through AI to say, hey, I've been living in public housing my whole life. I have three kids. I don't even have a GED. Okay, now we can help people through AI or through business development, through like a Goodwill or somebody else, get their GED. And then also kind of do a personality test and see, hey, an LPN fits perfectly with who you are. Here's a 1 year course. And by the way, when they graduate, they make 60K a year. You already lifted out your whole family and they have benefits and everything else. So that's what I'm excited about is having this financial companion that eventually what we want to do is take that across the entire housing, but then also release it to the public where now anybody can say, I'm not making enough of my job. What can I do to take the next step? And then this AI will be able to evaluate who you are, what you like, what education you have, and take, hey, if you get this degree or if you did this, here's another opportunity for you. It's amazing what AI can do right
You sure you're not the visionary in the trio? Are you sure about that?
now.
You sounded a little visionary
I'm
just
sold
then.
on this one though. Yeah, I think it's an amazing opportunity. And what our CTO and what we're working on is just absolutely mind-blowing to me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. When you look to the future, is that really what in terms of Impact Growth Capital is really becoming a, whether it be state by state or nationwide resource? Is that kind of what the vision might be, is to really see how far and wide you can go? Or talk a little bit about what the future vision is with your father, your brother, yourself, looking out maybe 5 years from now.
Yeah, I hope the next 5 years my dad's completely retired. Hey, eh? So that's my goal. He's that guy though that's he hurt his shoulder the other day because he was out there installing an air conditioning over his head, one of those big old split units. And he's like 70 something years old out there. What are you doing? Oh, you have guys for this. I know, but they're something. Anyway, so I'm trying to get him retired. I doubt he'll ever stop completely. I think we have the potential to do that. Of course, I'm looking at it, okay, region by region first. Let's start in three key markets, but then as we grow it, the software can grow exponentially. But that's just software once we get it proven. The real estate side, because really what we need to do is have three different pieces to do this the right way, because people need the support. So what we want to do is we want to own the real estate, okay? So we have people have a clean, safe, affordable place to live through public housing or through Section 8 or wherever, with a community center on the site. Or now they can have daycare services because that's a problem. People can't drive out to daycare or it's stupid expensive. So we want that subsidized through our nonprofit. So people have the ability to actually go and get the education, the ability to go and do these internships, or like for if they want to be an apprentice program through a plumber or welding, whatever else. These jobs pay a ton, but
Yes,
you've
they
got to go out
do.
there and do it. So
And
we give
yeah.
people the tools, I think people will start like really starting to thrive. So software to track it, tell them how to do it, the resources to give them the ability to go out and do it, whether that's having a computer, whether that's a daycare services, whatever people need, and then having the real estate so they don't have to worry about if their kid's safe, or if they can go outside or they're going to be robbed or if their car's going to be broken into. That's my ideal situation, is if we can own all three. If we did for just public housing, that's would be bigger than BlackRock. So one step at a time, right?
Yeah,
That's a lot. But I think I truly believe in the vision, and I think there's an amazing opportunity here, especially with this administration that wants to privatize, that wants to get it out of the federal government, that wants to cut all the spending. They can't afford to fix all the public housing issues. I think it's just the opportunity is it's amazing right now to have a real impact with their money, purpose, and profit.
absolutely. And what really listening to you tell the story is really amazing is how thorough you have been, how you've thought of almost conceivably every obstacle and said, okay, there's a way to knock down that wall. We're going to knock down that obstacle. We're going to knock down this obstacle. We're going to get you the learning we need. We're going to get you the opportunities you need. We're going to get you the housing you need. That's a given. But all these other pieces that I think certainly you probably know better than most, being exposed to those that are the beneficiaries of all this, it's not always as simple as, oh, I just need a roof over my head, is it? You know, there's more to it than that. There's way more to it than that. And the fact that you guys are really identifying all of those levers and saying, we've got to solve for it, that's really remarkable. You must feel pretty damn good going home at the end of the day saying, wow, we're making a difference.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ed, but I just think of like my own family. When we've been on food stamps, or my sister's still on like food stamps and things like that. So for me, it's a personal thing.
You've been there. You've been there. And so you better than any can really relate to where these folks are at. And all they have to have is the drive, the want. If they want it, it sounds like you've got a vehicle to make things happen for them in a big way and truly change the trajectory of not just a life, but an entire family maybe. So that's pretty special.
I think that's going to be the key, is showing people the opportunity, right? Because people been living on welfare or whatever for 10 years, there's an incentive not to do it. But if you, I think if we could show the first few people in each kind of community the potential and they do it, and then all of a sudden you're going to say, it's almost like keeping up with the Joneses, right? Oh my gosh, they did it. Now they're making great money welding. I don't know that they just pay welders crazy money, but that's like an internship for 2 years or something like that. So it's very possible to get people really good, high-paying jobs without a ton of education. You don't need a master's degree anymore.
And you are definitely on target with, I would say, both the trades as well as operators in manufacturing in many cases, irrespective of what people think or the perception of these occupations. These folks make some sick money.
Oh
And
yeah, pay them every day. Trust me, I know.
There's this shortage. So the companies are all clamoring for talent. Another channel of is really saying to the trades, hey, we've got some great people coming up from our ranks and they can support you and they're going to have the skills and knowledge that they need to have to support you. I think you'll find a welcome private sector saying, yeah, bring them on because we need them.
Oh,
I
yeah,
don't know a
absolutely.
single tradesperson in our region, we're based in New Jersey, where they're not looking for talent somewhere. They're always looking for talent. So that's pretty
Always.
awesome.
They're always booked up for months.
When I hear about the projections of what it's going to cost to get a simple plumbing repair in the next few years because of the shortage of plumbers going into the trades, I'm like, oh boy, it's about the cost of the appliance itself is the installation is going to be like double or something. It's
Oh
ridiculous.
gosh. I believe it. Yeah, I 100% believe it. Yeah.
This has been amazing talking with you, and I'm so excited for the mission that you're on with Impact Growth. That's really wild. For any of our listeners that wanted to learn more about you, about the company, maybe about the nonprofit, or maybe even get involved, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Jesse?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Two ways, impactgrowthcap.com, or you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, just Jesse-Sells on LinkedIn.
Got it. Got it. Great. Jesse, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. Again, we've been speaking with Jesse Sells of Impact Growth Capital, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. Thanks so much for joining us here at Growing Up B2B and have a wonderful day. Hey, Jesse, thank you again for being with us.
Appreciate it.
All right, my man. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeleaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Delia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.